chapter 1. Let me tell you at the start, at the preface, I think they call it, that this is the kind of message you've got to listen to. And if you're the kind that drifts in on part of Pastor Ivan's preaching and then drifts out and then drifts back and picks up a bit more and then drifts out, then this won't work with you, so you might as well go home now. This is the kind you've got to listen to. There's some messages that a minister knows God would have him to bring at that time, but he sort of shudders because of the difficulty in most of the audience understanding, especially the children and the young people and folks who don't read much. That's always a problem. Well, that's what we've got tonight. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 18, the Corinthian letter was written by a missionary back to a church that he started about 2 or 3 years prior. Paul went to Corinth. If you want the history of that church being started, apart from the letters he wrote that church a few years later, go to Acts chapter 18, and you'll find the brief history of the starting of the Corinthian church. So you take that history of its starting and get that placed in your mind. Then when you read his letters that he sent back to that church 2 or 3 years later, it makes more sense. It's better and easier to understand. I want to speak to you tonight on the subject, the ancient understanding of the cross. All right, chapter 1 and verse 18. Missionary writing the church he started now. For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness. But unto us which are saved, it is the power of God. Now drop down to verse 21. For after that in the wisdom of the world, the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God, it pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. Verse 22. Now listen. For the Jews require a sign. What in the world does that mean? Paul wrote this some 25 years after the ascension of Christ back to heaven. And the Jews were still looking for a sign. The Jews require a sign. What about us Gentiles? Here we are, and the Greeks' wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block, and to the Greeks foolishness. Now, with that reading, we want to think about the ancient understanding of the cross. Now, listen to the subject. Ancient understanding. Now, I'm not talking about what people thought about the cross 500 years ago, what they thought about the cross 1,000 years ago. I'm not talking about what they thought about the cross 1,500 years ago. I'm talking about the ancient understanding of the cross. 1,000 years before Jesus was crucified, what was social opinion of the cross? Do you know? 1,000 years, 2,000 years before he was crucified, the cross was in action. What was social opinion of death by crucifixion by the ancients? Now, I'm not talking about what you think about it today. Let's put that apart for a while. We're talking about the ancient understanding of the cross. What did people think about the cross 100 years before Jesus was born? What did they think about it during his 34 and a half years, whatever it was? What did they think about the cross 10 years after his crucifixion? Now, in this letter to the Corinthian church, Paul raises the curtain and introduces us to how the ancients understood the cross and how the Jewish people understood it. In the first chapter of 1 Corinthians, There are a number of words in this reading that I've given that'll sort of twig us on, as the Australians say, if we're interested. Look at 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 18. Look at that with me, will you? For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish, say that, church, foolishness. Foolishness. The word foolishness means maniacal or madness. Now, wait a minute. Here's a missionary saying, to preach the cross, society considers me a maniac, a madman. Wow. Today, you preach a good message and somebody shake your hand and say, boy, that is a great message on the cross. They didn't say it back then. They said, you're a lunatic to preach such a message. Another word. Look at verse 23 of chapter 1. Verse 23. He says, is to the Jews a stumbling block. Trypos, the word means they fall over it. You've stumbled. You fell. When Paul went in the synagogues, in the book of Acts, he enters the synagogue at least 12 times. At least 12, the record. And when he took the Tanakh, the Old Testament scriptures, and led them up to the New Testament, and culminating by showing how that man predicted was Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified, he did pretty good till he got to the crucifixion, and they exploded. Because a man dying on the cross in Jewish thinking, he was a scoundrel. He could not be the Savior of the world. I'm talking about the ancient understanding of the cross. Look at verse 23 again. To the Greeks, that's just a generic term for all Gentiles. To the Gentiles, it's foolishness. Now again, that word means a maniac or a madman. Now, I'm talking about how people, when missionaries were going out, when the first church was operative, when the events in the book of Acts were transpiring, I'm talking about how the whole world viewed the cross. They sure didn't do it like we do today. Now, there's a couple of verses I didn't read. Actually, this is three messages in one, so we ought to be out by two anyhow. I'll quote these others for you. In Galatians 5:11, Paul talks about the offense of the cross. Offense means a slanderous insult. They got one hanging on the wall back here. Slanderous insult. Wait till I finish before you stone me. Hebrews 12:2, he talks about the shame of the cross. Public disgrace and the social scandal. Wow. Now, in these verses that I've touched on quickly, Paul uses four different words to tell how society in his day, when he wrote this letter about 25 years after Jesus went back to heaven. I told you that. He's telling us how then and there, a long time ago, everybody looked at the cross. Everybody. Jew and Gentile. Isn't that a shocker? You never heard that before in your life, haven't you? Never in your life. It's for maniacs, it's for madmen, it's for crazy people. The Jews fall over it. It's an insult, it's a public disgrace, and it's a scandalous, it's a social scandal. That's across to the ancients. Two 2,000 years ago, when the Son of God was taken outside the northern gate and went up on Golgotha, the skull, and was nailed on the cross, everybody in society, including his own followers, were thrown out of the tree. If you think that Peter and James and John danced around and clapped their hands and said, oh, hallelujah, he's died on the cross, you don't know your Bible nor Bible background. Oh, no. They were converted Jews. Every time Jesus mentioned the cross, they fell back with a shudder. The ancient understanding of the cross. Well, time's almost out on me already. First, what I want to do with you. First, I'd like to show you what it means when Paul said to the Jewish people, the cross is a stumbling block. Turn to Deuteronomy. We looked at that this morning. Chapter 21. Deuteronomy chapter 21, if you will. Okay? That's the fifth book in your Old Testament. Deuteronomy chapter 21. Now remember, he said, the Jews trip over the cross. Trip over it. Stumble over it. They can't handle it. Hey, what are you talking about? The Messiah is going to die on the cross. You're crazy. Only the worst die there. Not the Moshiach. Not the Messiah. Never. Don't tell us that man dying there is a Savior. You're crazy. You would have said the same thing if you'd have lived then. All right, chapter 21. Let me find it. Now, look at verse 22. Wow. Now, I'm reading out of the Jewish law. It's called the Torah law. The Jewish law had 613 parts. Still does today to Orthodox Jews. And I'm reading part out of the Torah law that they still read. Orthodox and conservative Reformed Jews don't believe a snake can crawl or a fish can swim. But Orthodox and Reformed and conservative Jews read this today and say, hey, preacher, don't talk to me about your cross. Let me tell you what my Bible that you believe says about it. What? All right, listen to it. Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 22. And if a man hath committed a sin worthy of death, and he be put to death, and thou hang him on a tree. You ever notice how Peter kept referring to crucifixion? They hung Jesus on a tree. He was a Jew. How Paul kept referring to crucifixion? They hung Jesus on a tree. He was a Jew. Well, what about it? His body shall not remain all night upon the tree, but thou shalt in any wise bury him that day. For he that is hanged on a tree is cursed of God. Wow. Read the rest of it. The land will be defiled if you don't take a corpse off the tree by sundown. In the Jewish law, the Torah law, one of the 613 rules valid today with conservative and Orthodox Jews is, if a man is crucified, put to death, dies, hung on a tree, get him off, because us Jews say a man who's been put to death on a tree, that man has nothing but the curse of God Almighty abiding on him. And that's the reason why the cross is a stumbling block to the Jews. Their Bible says it is. Don't you understand that? Shake him. I'll hear him rattle. Come on. That's what our black people say in Africa. Shake him, bossy, I hear him rattle. You see that? So the next time a preacher reads about the cross being a stumbling block to the Jews, if you're, look, in South Africa, I had mostly Jewish doctors. At least the Jewish doctors, you can talk about God. To some of these Gentiles, oh, at least over there, you can't talk about anything. And we picked Jewish doctors. I remember my urologist, Dr. Mickey Cohen. I went into him, I played dumb. I said, Cohen, does that Hebrew for priest? Yes, how'd you know? And I had him. And was able to talk with him. You got to remember now that the Jews today still believe Deuteronomy. It's their Torah law. And if you ever witnessed it, now Spurgeon says, get a sinner and take him to the cross. That's great, but you better watch out with a Jew who believes his Torah. You can't take him to the cross first. Because if you start this cross business, and he's an informed Jew, I've had Jews, I had a radiologist, a Jew, I can't remember his name now, and I was trying my best to witness that man. He said, now preacher, I know where you're going, but my law says a man who's nailed on the tree is accursed by God, and I believe my law. Do you? That's the ancient understanding of the cross. Now with that in mind, imagine Paul going in the synagogue in those days and trying to convince them that Jesus, he could convince them that he was the Messiah. He took their Old Testament. When he got through, they didn't have any air left in them. But when he took the Messiah to the cross, they said, oh boy, hold on. Wait a minute. Now you're going against the very law you said you believe. I'm talking about the ancient understanding of the cross, how the Jews felt about it, and what they said. Now, you got that? That's the Jewish understanding of the cross. If you're ever witnessing to a Jew, don't hurry him to the cross too quick. Because if he knows his Old Testament, he's going to let you have that across the back, and you've had it. You'll have to be very, very careful. So we conclude in this first part of it, to the Jews, they hated. You say, "Oh, Brother Pike, that all happened a long time ago, and time and tide change things," and they sure do. But in history, in the 12th, 13th, and 14th centuries, we had another thing called the Inquisition. When the papal church murdered nearly 6 million people by the most horrific and unspeakable deaths imaginable, and several million of them were Jews who would not kiss the Catholic cross and recant Judaism. Do you understand why the children of the children of the children of the children of that group, 12th, 13th, 14th century, why their great-great-grace today know that? Do you understand why an Orthodox Jew hates the cross? You understand it? Get it in your gizzard. Don't talk to me about the cross. Let me tell you what they did to my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. He wouldn't kiss the cross, and they put him in the Iron Maiden and closed it, and spikes killed him. Now, don't say that's not history. It is history. Type in on your internet, Inquisition, I dare you to, and read it. So that's why the cross is a stumbling block. Martin Luther wrote some of the most vitriolic and hate-filled books on the face of the earth against the Jews. I have two of them. And he said, burn their synagogues, kill their children, don't give them work. Martin Luther. And did you know that when Adolf Hitler stood in the Reichstag of the German government and persuaded the German people to follow him in the great Holocaust, that he used Luther's books and said, here's what your Lutheran founder said, Sieg Heil. And they followed him. You didn't know that, did you? You ought to read a little bit. Get your head out of the idiot box and learn. Why do the Jews hate this? Here's a little bit of it. But we're through with them. The Gentiles. It's an idiotic message. It's insanity. It's scandalous. It's a public disgrace. Now, we forgot about the Jews. I've repeated it. You know that. Now, we're going to the Gentiles. All right. Now, here's where it's going to get a bit boresome for you who are not really interested. But just go on. You can go to sleep as long as you don't snore. All right? Now, here's what I've done. I got interested in this many, many years ago with one of my Jewish doctors, Eric Mausenbaum. He was another urologist. I actually went to his home and prayed with him. His wife was a secret Christian. People say, you can't be secret Christians today. Oh, yeah? Go to a Muslim country and try. Huh? People say, there's no such thing as a secret Christian. Oh, there's not. Live under Joseph Stalin and go out in the street and preach and see how long your little underground church lasts. Study your history. Aren't the catacombs filled with secret Christians? Isn't the ichthus fish still drawn there? You know, we in America, especially in the South, because we can bless God, if I don't like that church, I'll go to another church. You know how you build independent Baptist churches in the South now? By people shifting membership from one church to another. Isn't that right, Dennis? That's how you build it. You know how we had to build churches on the mission field? We had to go to them, shut up, be quiet, go to the shop, the butcher shop, the fruiterer, the baker, and make friends and make friends and make friends and win them one at a time to Christ. We didn't have some of the junk you have. Now, I got interested in this years ago. I couldn't stand it. I read that thing to the Jews, a stumbling block. Brother Jordan, I thought, somebody said this, and somebody, I said, no, he pulled that off the wall. He bought that at Walmart. That's not right. So you know what I did? I went back to seven ancient historians. Now listen carefully. And all of them live before or shortly after the death of Christ. I had most of their books. I'm giving my library away. I gave most of them to my son. So I went back to seven different historians. Now, a historian writes about history, obviously. And now these are all pagans. Pagans are devil worshipers. Demons are in idols, and when they worship idols, the demon transfers the worship to the devil, so pagans are devil worshipers. That's the short and long of it. You better not laugh at that one. And so I thought, all right, I'm going to read, and here's where I did it. I found their history books with indexes in the back. And when I found Christians, I didn't read the whole book, and I found Christians, I indexed it forward and read. Now, real quickly, remember, pagan historians lived before Christ and after Christ, and I thought, surely those historians who didn't believe in Jesus Christ anyhow, I wonder if they had anything to say about people dying on the cross. You see my logic? Now, I'm going to read them real quick. Now, some of you students should know the names or know some of them. First of all, Herodotus. He's called the father of history. I read his book so many times. Herodotus. He was a pagan. He was a Greek. 425 years before Christ. See, they were crucifying him in Egypt 2,000 years before Jesus was born. They were crucifying him in Babylon, in Persia, Media Persia, in Rome and Greece. Do you know today that in places Muslims are still crucifying Christians today, right now? The NBC in Herr Blitzer won't tell you that. No. Herodotus. All right, Herodotus, father of history. What did you say about it? Quote, crucifixion, the most wretched of deaths. That's a pagan. Cicero, Roman historian, died about 43 B.C. Cicero, tell me, crucifixion, the criminal deaths, horrible. Tacitus. He wrote his books after Nero died. He knew Nero would kill him for what he said. He was clever. Tacitus, what do you find? You pagan? Devil? What about crucifixion? Oh, that awful piece of wood. That fatal wood. That poison wood. The worst of deaths. Pliny the Younger died about 110 years after Christ. Pliny, what do you think about it? Oh, death, awful death, bound with nails, oh, criminal and his cross, alas, that gods forbid. Wow. Decasio, Roman. The cross is the place of shame, the barren, the terrible cross. Pagans. One more, Suetonius. This stuff's easy to read. Died 50 A.D. That shameful fashion in which to die. That way of death, I have no words to describe. One more pagan, Strabo. Died about 23. He died when Jesus was a young man. Strabo, what do you got to say? Listen to this. Wretched death. O cursed tree, I hate thee. That's pagan. Before, during, and after Christ. Now, I also found in research Martin Hingel. I got the page number and all here, but won't it? Martin Hingel, the German writer. Both of you don't know anything about the crucifixion until you've read his book, students. It's a little one. Martin Hingel. Let me show you some names that these historians gave death on the cross. One, the fatal wood. Two, nailed to the planks. Three, the dogs hanging. Four, O tree of shame. Five, the executioner's hook. Six, barbarous custom. Seven, you menacing thief. Eight, that cursed plague. Nine, tree be damned.
Wow.
Pagan. 10, evil instrument. 11, infamous stake. 12, criminal wood. 13, bound with iron. 14, gallows tree. Listen to what Cicero wrote. Or Cicero, some pronounce it. Page 42, Hingel's book. This guy is a pagan. He's in hell right now. You think he read? Let him have it. He says, the very word cross should be removed not only from every person and citizen of the great Roman Empire, but from the thoughts, the eyes, the mind, the hands, the body, the ears, the intestines of every living individual. Remember, Jesus died on one of these for you. Found one more thing. This was really interesting. As they led them away to crucify them, people would stand on both sides of the roads and jeer and mock. Jeer and mock. All right? And I picked up a couple of the sayings that they made into poetry, the pagans did in songs. Now listen to this. As they were leading the victims away to crucify them, some would sing, "You're a gallows bird, hang well," and cheer. Others would sing, "B-D-A-M, you hang dog." Others would shout, "Crucifixion, you anti-Roman beast, good for you." Others would shout, "Remember when Jesus said, if I be lifted up, I'll draw men to me?" Did you know that "lifted up" was a slogan about crucifixion that everybody knew for over 1,000 years before Jesus was born? And when Jesus said, "If I be lifted up," if you think everybody said, "I wonder what he was talking about," you're dead wrong. When he said, "If I be lifted up," they stood in horror. Now listen to what the pagan said. "Be lifted up, be lifted up, be lifted up. Dogs and swine, die." That was a song. I'll give you one more. The victim often would shout back, if he still had strength, with expletives and all sorts of things. And the one going to crucifixion would often shout back and say, "You blank blank, may you be nailed with me." Now, we're not in America. We're 2,000 years ago, right in the middle of crucifixion. But the ancients understood about it. Conclusion. And we're not talking about the Jews. We've already given them their place. Crucifixion. In the pagan heathen mind, historian, carpenter, plumber, engineer, in the pagan mind, orator, lawyer, whatever, soldier, in the pagan mind, by and large, a prosone, in the pagan mind, only the scum of their societies was to be crucified. In the pagan mind, death for crucifixions was for thieves, criminals, rapists, don't tell Jesse Jackson his Rainbow Coalition this, gays, sodomites, anarchists, political fighters, slaves, prostitutes. The garbage and trash of pagan society was reserved for death by crucifixion. If a man deserted the army, he was crucified. That's a good deterrent. It was used to maintain discipline. There's never been an army like the Roman army. Never will be. They used it to maintain discipline in the Roman legion. If a man betrayed secrets to the enemy, he was crucified upside down, naked, with his legs cut off from the knees up. If you incited anarchy and public uprising, you could be crucified. Now, with that, let me show you, if I can, the kinds of crosses. I drew this out in Australia years ago. Here's the types of crosses that were used. See it? Those were the different kinds. There's the T, the tall cross. I'm reading it backwards here. The T cross, Tau, Hebrew letter Tau. The next is what they call the double cross. The next is the St. Andrew's cross. He's supposed to be crucified on the X. The next is the plank cross, and the next is the cross. That's the kind of crosses, that's the only kind they've ever found. It's true, they nailed some people to a wall, nailed some of them to a mountainside, nailed some of them to a stone mountain with iron nails, but here were the main crosses for public execution right there. Now, since they hung over Jesus' head his accusation, we can almost pick out which one he was nailed on. Look at it real good. Now, to be hung on one of these, you had to be worse than Saddam Hussein. You had to be worse than Joseph Stalin. You had to be worse than Berea. You had to be worse than Nicolaitan. You had to be worse than Rasputin. To be hung on one of these, you had to be the biggest scoundrel, the lowest down rascal in a society that couldn't get any lower down anyhow. You had to be lower down than that to be hung on these. What the ancients thought about crucifixion. I'm hurrying. All right? Listen to this. One Roman writer said, this is a female writer, that's very rare. All a woman could do is her husband beat her up and her draw the water and have kids. One Roman writer said, it's supposed to be a female writer, the cross, sick delusion of the worshippers of Christos. Another said, senseless, crazy, stupid superstition. Another said, all women's fables are tales. Another, abandoned wretches worship a man who died on a cross. That's way back there. Another said, people with vain delusions. One more sign of madness. Let's call them cross dogs. Cross dogs. Now forget about it. Come on, go with me. Let's go way on back there. Let's live 2050. Now we're in that society. And I walk up to an educated man. I say, sir, explain the cross. I'm a Christian. My Savior died on the cross. Here's an answer out of a textbook. Who ever heard of a sinless man die on a cross when it's the place for the abominable of society and he died for the sins of others? Hey, you young guys going to be missionaries? I'm trying to show you what the first missionaries had to deal with. You go into pagan society in Corinth. You know what Paul told the Corinthians over chapter 1? He said, the only thing I knew among you was Jesus Christ and him what? Say it. What? In a pagan society where there's a temple of Aphrodite and every woman has to prostitute herself at least one time? What? Missionary, and you dare write back and say you didn't know anything, but can you imagine the difficulties in preaching in this atmosphere? That's the reason a man had to be filled with the Spirit and have the power of God. He couldn't put on a sideshow and a circus and act like a clown and be a fool and give away a helicopter and chase a grease pig around town to get a crowd in. Brother, a preacher in these days better have the power of God on him or his goose was cooked. Got that? Now, some of you really left me on the grease pig. Well, let's see if we can't wind it down. We see the Jews, we see the Gentiles. The whole world whistled against infant Christianity. Inner diaper, walking. Early stages of Acts, she's walking. Sold everything. 5 years later, Paul had to take collections up all over the world to help them after they messed up and selling everything. Infant Christianity, walking. And here's these men who have been saved by understanding that Christ died on the cross, and suddenly the ignominy of the cross is lost. It's vanished. Did you know that Alexander Hyslop, in his great book, Babylon, shows how that the cross was a pagan emblem worn by the priest in Egypt 2,000 years before Jesus Christ was ever born. Tell me, how many of you knew that one of the emblems of Hitler's Reichstag, of his Gestapo, how many of you knew that one of his emblems was a cross, the Maltese cross? It was an occult emblem. Do you know that they had a skull? The goat of Behemoth, a satanic emblem. And God said, Son, in order to show the world how awful sin is, you're going to be nailed on the worst emblem of ignominy known to man. You're going to be nailed on the cross. All right, Father. And once there, I'm going to reach to Adam here and the last one out there and keep the sins of the world and lay them on you. All right, Father. And then, Son, my holiness says I've got to do something about it. So I'm going to punish all those sins of everybody. I'm going to punish you for them just like you committed them. All right, Father. I'm going to make you to be the sinless become sin for the sinner. And it's going to be on the cross. And in the garden after the bloody prayer meeting, bloody sweat. Father, take this cup. You've heard this hick country preaching up in East Tennessee. Jesus is praying not to die on the cross. He didn't want to die on the cross. Christ was set to die on the cross before the foundation of the world. If you think he was praying in the garden not to die on the cross, you don't know anything. He didn't want his fellowship with the Father to be broken when God laid the sins of the world on him and God backed off. He said, I can take anything but that, oh God, please don't leave me. He said, it's necessary so that men can be saved. And then he said, not my will, thine be done. Three months before the cross in Luke 14, 3 months. The crowds, there was a rise of public popularity for Christ. There's a great inswell. And the crowds came from Perea, from Galilee, from Magdala. Crowds, the masses. Hundreds of, they came as far away as Syria. I checked, it's a 6 week walk from Syria. And they came that far. 6 weeks. Most people would walk across the street. And there's a great swell, and they were following Christ. And he stopped one day, and he turned around. And he said, let me tell you something. Luke 14:25. He said, if anybody wants me to be my disciple, and they said, yeah. He said, I want to be an evangelist. I want to be a pastor. I want to be an administrator of Christian school. I mean, you know how it is today, bro. You've heard this junk, haven't you? Oh, look, I want to be a pastor's wife and have 5 kids and go on mission field, start an independent Bible church and Bible school, and go turn over to a national pastor. That's an idiot. Hey, I didn't been that. I've seen the real side of it. Let me tell you something. Not all, but a lot of these missionary letters are padded, man. Padded. You find a missionary letter where they say, I'm not wanting anybody to God this year. You got a true missionary. Christ turned to the crowd and said, you want to follow me? Yeah, Lord, I'm the all man. I'm hot to go. Let's go. I'm going to follow you. He said, first of all, in comparison, loving me, he said, you got to hate your father, your mother, your brother, your sister, your wife, your kids, your grandkids, your uncles, the whole piece, all of them. He said, what? He said, if you don't do it, I said, you cannot be my disciple. He said, well, maybe I can manage that. And the last thing he said, one more thing. Let me know. This is 3 months before the cross. And remember, they knew all about crucifixion. Listen, 6 months before Jesus was born, there was a Jew by the name of Jannaeus Sambala, and he crucified over 800 Jewish priests. Crucified them. Okay? Crucified. Did you say staros? Cross? His wife said, come on, Benjamin, let's get out of here. Get to the inn. Joseph, get to the inn. Cross? You see, in those days, they knew that if the patibium, the crossbar, that's all that was laid on a man, he didn't carry the whole cross. If the crossbar was laid on his back, in those days, if a man had the cross laid on his head, on his back, they knew at the end of the road, he'd be crucified on it. They knew that. And when Jesus said that, the crowds were like blackbirds when I was a boy. I used to see them in the field, and I clapped my hands, and they were gone. Now, what time is it? Wow, look at that. It's already 8:30. Awful. Got to finish now. The ancient understanding of it. Oh, there's much more we could talk about. Never heard that before, have you? Never looked at it from that angle, have you? It's impeccably true. I've only given you a tip from history. You could call it the history of crucifixion. Do you know who in history did the first crucifixions, as far as history says? Semiramis, the wife of Nimrod, in Genesis chapter 11. She's accredited with crucifying her enemy. Semiramis, the wife of Nimrod. We sing, it's in my funeral instructions, in my wife's, that they're to sing, when I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss and pour contempt on all my pride. When my parents died, I was on the mission field. I won my dad to the Lord, and I couldn't come home. And I sent a letter through to my sister, and I said, be sure they sing the old ugly cross. When my sister died, I'd come in and say, sick, I couldn't go to her funeral, and they sang the old ugly cross. When I preached my mother-in-law's funeral, they sang the old ugly cross. Hey, man, something's happened between the ancient understanding the understanding today. All the horror and ignominy and awfulness attached to the cross, with the best that ever lived dropped his head back and said, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. And he sank and finished and said, it is finished. The creation that he made said, oh, I can't stand it. Earth said, it's killing me. He made me. I got to shake. And the rock stratas buckled and broke and pushed. And geology shook as its creator died. That vast realm of astronomy. The sun said, oh, I can't stand it. Let me hide my face. And darkness covered the land. He died. At every crucifixion, there were four Roman soldiers. One was a centurion. And the centurion fell back and said, oh, this is the Son of God. You see, that cross, Christ dealing with all my sin, Kenny, every one of them, oh my, every one of them, dying for me, all of them, that cross changed it all. It's changed today. What are we saying? Bliss? On a hill far away stood an old rugged cross, the emblem of suffering and shame. And I love that old cross for the dearest and best for a world of lost sinners and slaves. Let me close with this. Holman Hunt was a Britisher, a Brit. He was an artist. He had a hard time speaking clearly. He couldn't, he had an impediment. Holman Hunt wanted to do something righteous and divine. So he painted some scenes. And one of his paintings is called The Carpenter Shop. I've seen it. I talked to Dr. Bob Jones about it, and he came to us in Australia. I said, Dr. Bob, you have a copy? He said, no, Randy. I'd give $1 million if I did. He told me. The Carpenter Shop. This is a man who wants to share Jesus on canvas. And in the carpenter shop, Joseph is busy. It's sundown. Sun shining through the window. And
And the young boy picks up a cross beam and lays it on his shoulder. And the sun hits him, and the shadow is a reflection of a man hanging on the cross, on the wall. And Joseph drops the hammer aghast and looks at the shadow on the wall. Some of you need to look at the shadow on the wall. Some of you who've been saved by that cross and your life is as fouled up as a scrambled egg. Some of you, your wife and husband get along like dogs. Some of you are in sin up to your ears. Or you're not robbing banks and sleeping with other men and women. It's those respect. It's what Paul said in 2 Corinthians 7:1. It's spiritual filth. Cleanse yourself from it. I don't know how to end this. We just end it now. The ancient understanding of the cross. Well, I'm glad I'm a missionary in this era. And when I went to Australia, I went to Africa. At least, David, I was able to have a bit of a basis to start from. The ancient understanding of the cross. Now, you're a Christian, you say you are. Christianum, Christ-like. Next time you see a cross, next time you hear Stan or Kenny, our brother here lead singing about the cross, you think about what you're singing about. And maybe we'd sing it a bit different. Thank you. Let's stand and pray, shall we?